I'm Jackie Hall. I'm a senior lecturer at Northumbria University, as it suggests on there, and I'm hoping that these slides should click on quite nicely. I'm asked to talk about transitions in clinical practice, and the aims of this presentation, as you can see there, were to present a view of what it's like to be working at a university one day and to be deployed to Afghanistan the next. To explore the feelings and experiences of working as a Catholic nurse in a hostile area, and to reflect on the beginnings and endings achieved from this experience. As I say, my name is Jacqueline Hall. I'm a major in the TA, where I hold the position of a nursing officer in 335 Medical Evacuation Regiment. And this is me in Camp Bastion in Helmand Province in Afghanistan. In my everyday life, then, I am a senior lecturer at Northumbria University, where I teach nursing studies, and in particular patient handling and moving. And certainly after hearing the Archbishop speaking yesterday, some of my skills are usually down to the essential skills of patient handling and moving, and it gets forgotten about an awful lot of the time. And even though I teach it in a university, I was privileged enough to be able to transfer it even out into a place like Afghanistan. I'm married with three children, and I also have a grandson. I've been really, really quite fortunate, because in my role as a nursing officer in the Territorial Army, I have had experiences that I would never probably have experienced had I not been in the Army. And it was while I was in Gibraltar on one of our fortnight camps during Exercise Marble Tour that I was notified of the possibility to go to Afghanistan. I live in the northeast of England, and I work at Northumbria University in Newcastle upon Tyne, and they have 201 Field Hospital up there, where my unit in 335 Medical Evacuation Regiment is a nationally recruited unit. It means that most of my colleagues come from all over the country. However, 201 is a northeast group of people. So when it came to me being told, Jackie, Afghanistan, looks like you're going, we're going to put you with 201 Field Hospital. And it wasn't for my nursing skills, I found. It was mostly because I live in the northeast of England and I can understand Geordies. So the wonderful transition from being a nurse, teacher, senior lecturer, to being on deployment commenced. And my pre-deployment training was a bit awesome. If I tell you I'm 54, I was about 52 at the time, so I'm not exactly a youngster anymore, but I still have to meet the Army's criteria of being fit to actually go out to Afghanistan. We have still got to run a mile and a half, usually in about 12 to 14 minutes, although if you get as old as I am, I'm allowed 16 minutes now, and I still can do it, just. And we also have all sorts of other things, such as carrying our Bergens on our back and going off on marches and things. However, with all of this, off we went, and as you can see there, the transitions of nursing in the NHS to an army field hospital was pretty daunting when you combine that with military training as well. Have you spotted which ones? So off I was on the way to Afghanistan, and the mandatory tests seemed a bit endless. We had to learn all sorts of weird and wonderful things, everything from some of the languages that we might be faced with, and the Dari and Pashto, and when you can imagine that as a nurse, I was about to work on a ward as a ward nurse for a change, which was great for me because I love getting my hands dirty. But you had things like certain words like Tashnab, which some of you might not recognise, but some of you might, if I'm saying it correctly. We had patients who needed the toilet. So that was, you know, I need the toilet. However, what I didn't quite appreciate was when we had some children on the ward, I didn't know the Pashto for potty. And it was really hard to try and find out exactly what the transition was. And finally, after sort of being absolutely, oh God, what does this child want? We had to get the interpreter in. He said, she just wants to go to the toilet. But I tried it. Yeah, but you see, potty, toilet, two different words, and it's the same in Pashto or Dari. However, we managed to get through it. This was me then when I finally arrived in Helmand Province. We had to go through some more pre-deployment information. And there I am, looking a little bit scary. A nurse with a rifle. You think obstetricians are bad? If I tell you, we were put in a great huge hall with about 200 other people. Most of them were men, although they did get a bit of a shock when us nurses went over because it was suddenly, females, out here, fancy that. And there was an awful lot of snoring. And if you can imagine 200 people in one big, what do you call it? It was almost like a hangar, I suppose. We were just on those green camp beds, and that's where we sort of slept for the rest of the period of the time. We eventually were allowed to come out into little pods of 10 people, but I'll come to that in a minute. However, living in Afghanistan, there's no alcohol allowed out there, but there was some entertainment, and we were very, very fortunate. Can you recognise who's there? James May, Richard Hammond, and Jeremy Clarkson. That they came out to see us. They didn't tell anybody in the media that they were coming out. They came quite discreetly out to see us, and they were absolutely fantastic fun. The morale raising was unbelievable. So they really were a godsend. They were brilliant. And when you consider that I was out there when Gordon Brown came, I knew he was there. One of my colleagues who was in my pod waited 2 hours for him to actually arrive. He was there for about 5 minutes, maybe, that she actually saw. Kind of, there's a little bit frustrating at times that you thought, these guys actually came with a bit more morale than our Prime Minister at the time. I'll get struck off now for saying that, but never mind. The other picture there, if I tell you the fella in black, I'm sorry, lads, he's a padre. This was part of Padre Productions. We put on Aladdin, because I was out there during the Christmas period, the Padre's production suggested would we be happy to be involved in doing some sort of entertainment things, and one of our priests, Father David Smith, actually managed to have contacts in London, and they to and froed a bit with costumes and all sorts of weird and wonderful things, and as I say, even the Padres took part. Am I allowed to tell you this as well? Oh, go on. He was supposed to be, you know the story of Aladdin, you have a genie. He had two genies. He was the genie of the itchy ring. Got to remember it's army. It was slightly indelicate. And he was also a marine. I don't know if that means anything either. However, here we are, a nurse in a hostile area, working as a nurse in what was then still at a hospital tented complex. So if any of you have ever watched MASH in the good old bad old days, that's almost exactly what we had. I was in a MASH. There were dangers. A lot of the time we felt that we were in a kind of a protected bubble, and at home we would keep telling people, we're fine, we're nurses, we're just in this little hospital, we're safe. There were some of our nurses who were in what's called the MERT team, and I'm sure I don't have to tell you, you must have seen some of the things on the television where you've seen some of the programmes, where nurses and doctors do go out to the very core of all of the dangers and collect casualties, and casualties happen at the front line, so they were going flying out and collecting casualties and coming back with them. The experiences were many and varied, and one young man I had came up to me, he must have been about 18 or 19, and he was a private, and he came up to me one day when I was standing outside the NAFI, and he said, I'm sorry ma'am, but I don't think there should be women out here. Well, pardon me for nursing you. But what he was talking about was he was actually on patrol with another female soldier. And while he was on patrol, she was supposed to be in the lead position. So technically she was supposed to be safeguarding him. And it turned out that there was somebody who appeared with a rifle in hand and was about to shoot. She froze. He pushed her out the way and he shot. And after he shot, the two of them went up to see what the result was. He did kill that person, but that person was a 12-year-old boy. And when he came to me and he was saying, I don't think there should be women in the army, I had to think, is he really saying, I don't think there should be women in the army, or is he really upset that he's just caused the death of a 12-year-old? And it didn't really matter that it was Taliban at the end of the day. So values for care, it wasn't just physical care at the end of the day that I found that we were doing. It was an awful lot of emotional and psychological care as well. But we were there for the common good of society and to try and make things better. Those of you who are healthcare carers in a hospital environment, wash your hands. You see, we might have been out in Afghanistan, but our control of infection nurse was absolutely wonderful. She was going to make sure we were going to wash our hands if we did nothing else. And as a result, we probably had the lowest rate of diarrhea and vomiting during the time that we were actually out there. Positive gains from this experience? Well, we did have some miracles. And the treatment and care was absolutely second to none. I cannot sort of stress hard enough how we were in an environment where if a casualty came through into A&E, if he needed a surgeon, if he needed a multiplicity of experiences and knowledge, and we had it, everybody was up, everybody was there waiting to give their two pennyworth. And unlike the NHS, and obviously it's going to be would be very difficult to do, if we knew that we had casualties coming into Camp Bastion, everybody was up and we were all ready to do what we had to do. And it didn't matter whether you were on duty 5 hours or 5 minutes, you were going to carry on being on duty until you weren't needed any longer and then go to bed. The recovery of the casualties was amazing. This chap, he was an interpreter for the British Army. He was a lovely, lovely guy. He was 20 years of age. He'd been working for the British Army for about 3 years. His education had been in Pakistan, in a university down there, and the Army had him as an interpreter for them. He was with a captain and a couple of other soldiers when an IED went off, and that explosive device managed to kill his captain. He should have been dead by rights. This lad had a brain injury initially. He had shrapnel wounds all over his body, on his arms, on his legs, on his chest. He ended up having to go into ITU and ended up with a trachee. We really didn't think he was going to survive, and he was amazing. We got him back out of ITU. He came onto the trauma ward where I was working, and as you can see, he's got a shaved head. Well, if you can imagine, when we first do some brain surgery, they only shave the bit that they're actually going to surgically operate on, and he looked a pretty bad mess, and his brother came in to see him. Can I shave his head? Yes, please, carry on. So the poor lad ended up with a complete shave, but recovered 100%, and we were absolutely amazed that he should still have all his faculties and that he had no residual weakness at all. Truth, goodness and freedom. Well, coming to terms with trauma was really difficult, and it didn't make any difference what side of the fence you were on in some respects, what grade of staff you were, whether you were an Afghan, whether you were Taliban, whether you were Afghan army, whether you were a child that just happened to be in the crossfire. And then of course, from the military point of view, we had a number of soldiers who came from the Danish army, American army, and the British and German armies into Camp Bastion. And they would all get the highest standard of care. We try and work towards NHS equivalents, and we probably try and, in some instances, go over and above what the NHS standards are, I would believe. The welfare support, though, that we had was second to none. The welfare officers, we had a welfare tent where you could go any time you wanted, day or night, and if it was just a quiet time you wanted, or whether it was just to borrow a book, watch the telly, or talk to somebody, these welfare officers were wonderful. They were there to help support you. Sometimes we did lose some of our patients. One particular young man, who again you might have seen on television, at Christmas time, it was Christmas Eve, he came in. He lost both his legs and an arm, and he was 22, I believe, at the time. I have a son who's 23 on Saturday, and all I could think of was, I could be this mother's mother to this boy. That could be my son lying there. And we were looking, thinking, how would you tell the parents of this child? Like, the good news is, your son's alive. The bad news? No legs, and he's lost one of his arms. And yet that young man was lying in casualty, still conscious, saying, thank you for saving my life. Thank you for saving my life. And we were really quite gobsmacked, because we kept thinking, well, if he's thanking us for saving his life, there must be something special about this young man that he's got to be here. And as I say, I don't know if any of you saw the programme Wounded. My friend's daughter filmed that, and she said he really was a marvellous young man, and hopefully he will survive very well because of his character, if nothing else. The chaplaincy, though, did provide a huge amount of support to the likes of that young man and others who, friends were injured or died, and they did play a huge part. We had about five chaplains, I believe, altogether. We had Church of England, Church of Ireland, Church of Scotland, Lutheran and Catholic padres out there, and they were absolutely superb. They were a brilliant team, and they really did help and support us. The lessons we learned when I was out there, that we could deliver a first-class nursing care, bearing in mind I'm a nurse by background, even if it was in a tented complex. And these are our these are our boxes that had everything from a hypodermic needle to a syringe to all sorts of weird and wonderful dressings. And it was amazing how we could pack so much in into a small space and keep them aseptic if it was necessary. We had mental health, adult nursing, child nursing, acute and chronic conditions. We saw the lot on those wards. While I was there, there was a young man who lost a kidney, and so they did a nephrectomy on him. We had a girl who'd had an asthma attack for the very first time. We had a young man who was an Afghan lad who was about 14 or 15 and didn't want to be an Afghan soldier, but knew that the Taliban have such power over there at times that they'll go to a family where there's a young man and they'll say, we want your firstborn son, if you like, to be a soldier. And they will take him, and it's supposed to be an honour that they're going to take him. Well, this young man just didn't want to go and thought that if he shot his trigger finger off, he wouldn't be able to shoot, so he wouldn't be of any use to them. What he didn't quite appreciate was that as he was sat in the kitchen with the gun in one hand and he went to shoot himself, his mother was sitting in the trajectory and she ended up with that bullet in her abdomen. And she and he came into the complex. She survived. Talk about the miracles, I thought. She actually managed to survive. But as Martin's already sort of alluded to, this is a third world country. For you to be able to operate on somebody like this, you had to be really careful that you didn't do something that we would do in the UK and expect it to be able to be carried on. So what she couldn't afford to have was a colostomy. A bag on the outside for the toileting, it wasn't going to work for this kind of person. She would never be able to get the resources to be able to manage it. So the doctors were absolutely superb, ended up managing her. It took quite a while. She was probably one of our longest stay patients, but they did actually manage to do an anastomosis for her and actually saved her life as a result. She'd been into ITU at least twice, so we didn't think she was going to make it. But again, she was one of our miracles. She actually did survive. The equipment that we had, some of it was a bit new to us because it was military and some of us were much more orientated to NHS stuff, but it was amazing how the military equipment did work very, very well. And we had to be aware that the medical equipment that you have in a military hospital, which is a mobile hospital for us when we first went out there, has to withstand the heat, has to withstand the cold. I went out there and it was 35 degrees centigrade. I came back, minus 22. My sleeping bag? Tropical. Was I cold? Just a little bit. But that was the kind of things that we were given when we went out there, and you did manage to find a way of how to use it, and it worked very well indeed. Cleanliness was definitely a priority, and one of the things, again, that we saw that was heartbreaking was we nursed a little girl who was about 2 years old. She'd been in as a result of an explosive device. She'd got burnt, and it was mostly head injuries. For her as a little girl, she was kind of lucky, if you can call a burner lucky, that it was the back of her head. Girls in particular in Afghanistan, the parents are wanting them to be married off, and if you've got any imperfections and you're going to run the risk of not getting married off, that's not good news to the family. So for her, in a way, she was kind of lucky. Where it was unlucky was we were getting what we call a mass CAS, a massive casualty intake, and we had to clear our wards of any patients who were well on the way to recovery. And she was one of these children who was well on the way to recovery. By this stage, she'd had dressings on her scalp, and all she basically needed was just these dressings renewed every now and then. So we sent her out. 4 weeks later, she came back to to the gates of Helmand Province and of Camp Bastion, and the men on the gate said, "I'm sorry, you are no longer an acute case. We can't treat you anymore. You have to go to your own local medical facility." They hadn't changed that dressing from the day that we put it on 4 weeks prior. And unfortunately, that little girl ended up with septicemia and a week later died. And that was the tragedies that we were faced with. And as a military organisation, yes, we will treat you as an acute admission, but unfortunately we are expecting the host nation to carry on the medical care. But that was the reality of it. Some of them did not have the education, did not have the sensibility to know that we'd given them these dressings for them to change them daily, and they hadn't done that. So education and training, not only just for us, it was vital, and yet it was provided at all levels as well. That's my pod. That's me in the white shirt. T-shirt. We're all watching. One of the girls had a computer which could pick up BFPO television. And we were watching the Christmas edition of Strictly Come Dancing. And I hate to have to admit that we even did get EastEnders. We occasionally all sat in and just a huddle around her screen. There was 10 of us in there, and I don't know if you can see in the far corner there, that's my birthday cards. I had my birthday while I was out there as well. Much to the horror of my daughter, who I'm a twin, and kids have a wonderful way of stabbing you in the heart sometimes, and she'd written this letter to me saying, "Dear Mummy, Auntie Linda's having a birthday party and we've all been invited, but because you're not there, I don't want to go." When you're sitting at breakfast time. Not good. That's the Effie in the corner, in the far corner. That was our kind of naffy. And would you believe, Pizza Hut? I had a pizza for my birthday. And below there, I'm in a helicopter. No, that's a big con, really. I did sit in the helicopter. No, I didn't. I can't fly. The values some soldiers were teenagers who grew up too quickly, rather like the young lad that I told you about before. And life took on new meaning to those who had actually been injured. And it was amazing how many of them just accepted their injury and just went for it. For some of us, the chaplains really did give us some great support. And many did appreciate the spiritual guidance that actually was on offer. This picture in particular is incredible. Father David Smith, who's in the front there, who still amazes me to think that he managed to get Tropical Combats as his alb. I don't know where he got it from, but hey, he was the only one who had it, as far as I know. He managed to go and get in touch with a bishop, who then said that he could give this man first, he could be baptised, have his first his reconciliation, first Holy Communion, and his confirmation all on the same day. So that was us. Absolutely thrilled a bit for him that he managed to get through that. The aims of this presentation was to present a view of what it was like to be deployed to go on tour and to explore the feelings and experiences of working as a nurse in a hostile area, and to reflect on the positive gains achieved from this experience. And in answer to all these aims, it really was a new beginning and, for my family, a welcome ending. The rewards was the fact that I actually did come home, and I don't think I quite appreciated how much they were affected, because it was only when I came home that they started to tell me the stories of... Any of you ever had an Argos Christmas? Christmas was going to be cancelled in our house, apparently. My husband had gone into rejection mode and told the kids, "Mum's not here, we're not having Christmas." The kids sensibly said, no, Dad, you can't do that, it's just not on. It's Christmas. So they got hold of the Argos catalogue, went through the Argos catalogue, decided what they all wanted, and more or less said, "Just pay here." When I came back, and the following year when we had Christmas, the kids said, "Ah, this is so good." "What do you mean?" "Well, we knew what we were getting last year." They'd all ordered what they wanted, and that's exactly what they got. But it was amazing how many times kids will say, "I want this, that and the other," and they kind of don't know whether they're going to get it or not. And then you throw the extra things in that you know that they really want, but they never really asked for. And so that last Christmas, yeah, Thumbs up. I must be doing something right after all. This was when I actually went to collect my Afghan medal, and that's my youngest daughter, and that's my husband. She, again, I didn't get to hear this until I came back. She said, "Mum, can I come with you when you go to 201 to go off to Afghanistan?" And I said, "Well, I'm leaving Newcastle at 6 o'clock in the morning. You realise that, don't you?" "Yes, yes." She doesn't do mornings. Right? She's now 16, so she was about 14 at the time. She really doesn't do mornings. Even at 16, she still doesn't do mornings. So for her to suggest she was going to get up, this was quite a feat. So, yeah, you can come and join us. So off she came, said her goodbyes, and what I didn't find out until later was she cried for the moment that she left me for the whole of that day. And she went home and then went off to school and cried all day in school. And everybody at St. Benebiscuits knew that Josephine Hall's mum's gone off to Afghanistan. And it was awful. And again, you get to hear me, "How awful am I? I'm such a wicked mother." And in between time, my husband, he wasn't much better, at church each Sunday they would say, "Dave, how's Jackie doing?" So tears would come again, and it was like, "Oh, goodness." And they stopped asking in the end. They'd ask the kids, "How's your mum?" Because your dad can't tell us, can he? But this was the day that I came back to Fenham Barracks from Afghanistan, and it was wonderful to see all my family meet me. So that's my son, my two daughters, and my grandson. Thank you for listening.